Hey there, Pod Pals. Are you a print-on-demand creator looking to stay ahead of the curve? You want to know exactly when to launch your designs for every key season and event? How about a chuckle with an extra dad joke to brighten your day? If you said yes to any of these, then it's time to join the Print On Demand Cast VIP list. As a VIP, you'll get our free annual design calendar, an amazing guide to help you time your creations perfectly throughout the year. And of course, we'll include a bonus dad joke each week as well. Signing up couldn't be easier. Just visit printondemandcast.com/VIP and enter your email. Don't let another day of potential pass you by. Become a part of the VIP list, grab your annual design calendar, and let's dive into a year of inspired creating together. We'll see you on the other side.
Radical! Welcome to this week's episode of the Print On Demand Cast. Each week, join the gnarly Travis and Josiah as they provide insight into the print-on-demand industry and equip you with the totally tubular tools, advice, and strategies you need to achieve success and hopefully have a few laughs along the way. Now on to this week's Totally Tubular Show.
Hey everybody, welcome back to a brand new, fresh episode of the Print On Demand Cast. Episode 110 is now officially underway. And as always, joining me, my co-host, Travis Ross. Travis, happy Monday, maybe, depending on how it went for you. So you tell me, happy Monday, mediocre Monday, bad Monday, which one?
I'm just gonna say it's a Monday because it seems like every Monday lately has been, there's been issues, but I don't want to, you know, get all into the doldrums and share all of my pain. And it's sometimes it can be cathartic to kind of share about all the things that are going wrong. But at other times I just feel like I feel bad for our listeners because they just have to put up with all of our, you know, sad stories. But
yeah,
you know, suffice it to say it was yet another Monday. And you know, as such, there were some issues, but like I say, we don't need to go into that.
Yeah.
It's episode 110 of the podcast. Who needs that, right?
Yeah, exactly. We are.
And I'm wearing this cool Led Zeppelin shirt that
right.
I got from our buddy Uncle Mike, you know, and it printed really well. And
looks great. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. I like your shirt too.
Yeah, look at that. The old Cobra Kai parody. Print On Demand Cast t-shirt. And for those that are wondering where you can get one, simple solution, printondemandcast.com/shop is where you can get one of these exact shirts. And then go watch the new season of Cobra Kai in all of its cheesy, campy glory. absolutely wonderful. So, hey, you know, we're gonna cut the waffle a little bit short. Maybe we'll revisit the waffle after this, but we've got a special, we've never had a field reporter before, someone that's out there on the go. It's not, it could be a traffic update, maybe, but probably won't be. We'll see. But we're going to go to this week's point of interest, and then we'll let you know who's out in the field to report on the interest of this particular point.
Well, howdy, partner. Welcome to the point of interest part of the POD cast. So grab your hat and hold on tight because we got some learning to do.
Wow. All right. Well, joining us once again from some interstate in California, you know him, you love him. He's practically family because we gave him the title of uncle. Mike Perillo is back on the show with us. Mike, thank you so much for being a new correspondent and bringing us a
break. Lovely applause.
Of the point. Yes, you are welcome, friend. You're welcome. May it carry you into good luck into your cornhole tournament that you're going to, or if it is a tournament, maybe it's just an exhibition.
No,
I don't know how it works.
it's a tournament.
Okay. Good to know. I know nothing about that game other than the point that you try and get the bag in the hole, which anyway, so interesting points. We had a couple weeks ago, we talked about this Amazon Health dashboard. I think that they're getting ready to roll out. And, you know, Travis and I speculated on a few things, and there was a conference coming up that we hoped Amazon would shed more light on what exactly this is, whether they did or they didn't. Well, that's why you're here, Uncle Mike, to let us know what's the latest update on this Amazon Health dashboard, and what do listeners of our show who have an Amazon account need to know?
So the kind of the song and dance at the conference was, you know, just a little bit of a song and dance. Didn't really give us a little more insight, but there's a couple of things that we've kind of figured out in the last couple of weeks. They're rolling out the dashboard. Mm-hmm. It's a gradual rollout. Supposedly it's supposed to be done and on everybody's account by the end of 2022. And a couple of things to note: the calculation from the old dashboard, which you guys know, that which has the three color codes and healthy, mm-hmm. at risk, unhealthy. The calculation on the new one is a little different and takes into account a few more things that could be bad or good, depending on what state your account's in. So it takes in things like how many orders you do. And it's the equivalent of kind of a credit score, if you guys know what a credit score kind of is made up of. It's how worthy you are. It's if you've made any big mistakes, you know, those will decrease your score. If you're selling a lot of things and you don't have a lot of problems, either in shipping or intellectual property problems or otherwise, your score is going to be higher. One thing to note that it is pretty interesting, it's a scale from 0 to 1,000. Anything under 200, you're kind of in trouble. Anything below 100, you're really in trouble and your account will probably be deactivated. But yeah, one thing to note is you don't start at 1,000 and go down. You actually start at 200, is something that I learned the other day. So if you end up with like a 204 or a 200, you're probably not selling a whole lot of things, and you might, you know, be one or two problems away from a bigger problem. So, the things your listeners probably need to know, I'll just hit these pretty quickly. If you have any problems in your account health dashboard, you need to address them as quick as possible. Don't sit on them. But also don't be impulsive about trying to fix them. So if something gets taken down, the worst thing you can kind of do is write when you're upset. You know, like you're probably not going to write anything that's worth it, and you're going to probably cause more problems. The second thing that you probably, or you really do need to be careful of, is sometimes you can get notifications for certain things that would affect your account health, but then they magically don't show up in there, but they are not gone. They exist in the ether, and Amazon will cite them as problems, even though you have no way to appeal them. It's kind of a little catch they get you in, where they can try to deactivate your account or give you a 72-hour notice that you have to write a plan of action, and then they include these ASINs or products that, you might have saw the notice, but you were like, okay, cool, you know, they didn't show up in there, so it must not be a problem. No, it's a problem. The best way to deal with that, if that does happen, is to use the account health call button to get a hold of somebody, and they'll hopefully be able to help you. But yeah, the only way to really get an issue, especially with intellectual property, off your account is to get the ASIN reinstated. If you do not get that magic email that says the product was reinstated and your product doesn't go live again, you still have an issue that you need to deal with that still can be a suspendable offense. So that's kind of what we know. Yeah.
Yeah, I know one of the things that, you know, we've worked together on some of my issues, and you've helped me through some of my issues. And I know, I think one of the things that our listeners could know is that, you know, if you do, you know, write back to Amazon or appeal, you know, something, or say, hey, this is, you know, what happened, if you do that, and then they come back and say, well, thank you, but that we don't care, or, you know, in maybe not so many words, but, or more words than that, don't give up. Keep going. I know, Mike, you have, do you have an average number of back and forth appeal processes that when you've seen like success, it's probably 5 to 6 or even more sometimes that you're going back and just reiterating, maybe changing a few words, and you keep pushing until maybe you get it in front of the right person. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is definitely fair to say. On average, it can be 5 to 8 from what I've seen. But you also have to be careful, because when you get to a certain number of appeals so many times, they actually take the ability to appeal that ASIN away from you. I think that number is around 22 or 23 from what I've seen. So if you appeal something 23 times and you're not giving them enough information that they'll reinstate it, they won't reinstate it, and you will have an even bigger problem if your account comes under scrutiny. So
it just basically will stay there for the whole 180 days. But hey, I mean, 22 times is a lot, you know, a lot of times that you can go back and forth. So I guess to me, the moral of the story is don't just do it once. And if they say no, just allow it to die there. I think part of it is like pushing and trying to continually go back to them, you know, like you're saying, up to 20, 22 times, you've got an opportunity to get that thing fixed. And so, having that off of your account is worth the extra effort, because it only takes, from what we're seeing, it only takes a few to get under that 200 and potentially even under that 100, especially if you're not selling a ton of things. You know, it would be nice if you, if they started you higher and then, like you say, they ding you as you go down, but that's not the way they're working. And nobody has like exact numbers of, well, a suspected intellectual property violation takes this many points off and a sale puts this many points back on. You know, nobody knows any of that except for Amazon and their massive algorithm.
There is a max that they have in the help files. If you go read about account health, it says at max on a repeat violation, you can have five, what do they call it? Infringements. So that's suspected and received. And two restricted, which is kind of absurd because Amazon has false positives all the time where they think a t-shirt is a pesticide or something like that.
Right.
So two, five intellectual property problems at the same time or two restricted and you're going to zero. I've already seen that happen. You're going straight to zero and you'll probably, you may get a 3-day deactivation notice. You might get a 7-day, but from what I've seen, when you go to zero, you're getting a 3-day deactivation, which means you basically have 3 days to fix those problems. And some of them can only be fixed by seller support, which, as we know, is not the most fantastic thing in the world right now. So not, you know, nothing against Amazon. You just have to be really diligent. And if something seems like it's not quite right in the dashboard, like I said, like your ASIN doesn't show up or you got a reinstatement email, but it's still in account health, you need to follow up and make sure that they take care of that because they might have hit the wrong button. The, you know, their programming could have done something weird and maybe it didn't get reinstated. I've had ASINs drop off, go back and then drop off again. I've seen a couple of instances of that lately. And then the person's getting a 72-hour POA and that is the ASIN that they're citing is the one that was in there. And it went away without a reinstatement email and then came back and then went away again. It's like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
So it's kind of a mess. It's definitely something you're going to have to watch out for. And I guess the last thing I'll kind of say is that it does. So every, almost every year, Amazon does what I call a pre-Q4 cleanup, or we see it sometimes before Prime Day, where they're, allotment of allowances seems to shrink a lot and they are trying to clean up basically bad actors on the platform. So I'm starting to see instances of that starting this week. I've seen several, you know, 72-hour POAs and situations where
and that's plan, you know, like, of action.
Plan of action, sorry,
plan of action.
Plan of action in 72 hours. And if it's not good enough, you will be deactivated. So I've seen that. I saw that actually a lot today and a little bit at the end of last week. So it looks like they're rolling out their pre-Q4 cleanup. I don't know if it has to do with the dashboard or not, but it could be or it could just be a coincidence. But yeah, but definitely be diligent of what you've got going on in account health, whether it's a, you know, if you've got an order defect rate that's high or a, you know, a shipping kind of problem. Where you've got like shipping defects a lot or your on-time delivery is bad. I mean, I would try to fix everything as fast as you can right now.
Yeah. All right. So before we let you mosey on down the road to your cornhole, pretty much everything you've said so far has, you know, cued this sad violin. It seems pretty bleak. Can you leave us with something like some positives about Amazon? Like, would you recommend sellers to sell on Amazon? And if so, I know this is, I've had a lot of conversations with Uncle Mike, guys, and we've had a lot of like bashing Amazon in the background. Yeah. Because it's just sometimes, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. They kind of throw out these new updates. Everybody gets caught in the, you know, the crosshairs, or not everybody, but a lot of people get caught in the crosshairs, and then they go back and they fix it. So give us something that is a positive, Mike, before, you know, everybody goes and, you know, before nobody wants to ever sell on Amazon again.
Yeah, I mean, the positive is more of, you know, just diversify yourself as best you can. Yes, you can sell on Amazon. Yes, there's still money to be made there. Just make sure that you're not doing anything wrong, you know, and make sure that you understand what is wrong and what is right. So if, you know, if you're designing things, make sure that somebody doesn't have a trademark. I mean, my rule of thumb is pretty simple. It's like, if I can find it somewhere else on the internet, I'm probably not going to use it. There is no magic rule that says it.
Uh-oh, did Mike just freeze?
That's terrible.
That is. Mike,
you're so close. Froze, you froze. You're so close.
Oh.
Is he going to come back? Is he... Hey, he's back.
Hey. He's back.
You froze.
I know. I have two bars. I don't know what happened. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, just, you know, diversify your business as best you can, and then just make sure on Amazon you're not doing anything you shouldn't be. And what I would also caution you on is other platforms like Etsy and eBay and places like that. They're not far behind on Walmart. They're not far behind what Amazon does. Amazon's kind of the leader. So if they start, you know, taking out a lot of people for certain things, these other platforms will do the same thing. So what you might have got away with at one point on another platform or Amazon, you're probably not going to get away. They're always trying to make sure that their customer base is safe from any issues.
Sure.
So, yeah, but I mean, there is still money to be made out there, and there's plenty of other ways to make it too outside of Amazon. You know, you can find a niche and kind of, you know, ride that. You know, like, I wouldn't completely be like, oh, I'm giving up. You know, there's always something you can do.
All right. Well,
cool.
Just a little bit of a silver lining there. But thank you so much for coming on to the show quickly for a point of interest, and may you have all of the luck at your cornhole tournament.
How many
teams are you up against?
I think there's like 18 teams tonight. Good call. So we'll see where I finish. I've been doing okay lately, maybe finishing in the top five or six in the last few that I've been to in the last few weeks. So,
all right. So it's a singles tournament then?
Tonight is something called Switch, where you kind of move around partners. And then who you get for the finals is kind of based on where you ranked in the preliminary qualifiers. But yeah, it's should be, I think it was like 36 people going. So there'll be about 18 teams.
Cool.
Wow. That's incredible. Well,
may all your bags land in the hole.
Thank you guys.
You are welcome. Thanks for coming on the show, man. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Catch you later. Too.
All right. Bye. All
right, see you, Mike.
Bye. All right. Well, there's more about cornhole than I thought we'd talk about in this episode. But, you know, thanks to Mike for coming on the show and giving us a quick update. We were kind of talking about, like, you know, I asked you if you had an update, and you're like, we should just call Mike because he's going to know.
Right.
Probably exactly. The most. So,
yeah, we both watched the Accelerate conference link for the session for Account Health, and immediately after, like 5 minutes after they were done, we were on the phone talking about it, and just basically, I mean, everything we're doing right now, we're talking about is, you know, based on, you know, accounts that we've seen, but a lot of it is kind of like ideas or thoughts that, you know, they're just hypotheses at this point. And as this thing's rolled out, I think, as you know, we're going to see a lot more, evidence for one thing or the other. And
yeah,
it's, it's definitely, there's a little bit of like hesitation as we're going into Q4. It's like, man, Amazon, couldn't you do this in like January or February or something? But
sure.
I get it. I think one of the things that we talked about, I don't know if we mentioned this on the last podcast, but one of the ideas I had, and I think actually Mike had it, you know, if they can kind of slim down some of their sellers by, you know, these measures, that also lowers the amount of FBA products that they're having to store in their facilities. And so it makes sense for them to do it right before Q4, get the bad actors out, get some of the people that are trying to skirt the rules out. So they limit, and so they can put more of the good products, if you will, into their FBA centers and just have more room for those things. So yeah, a lot to unpack there. We just, you know, again, we're just giving you our opinions and our thoughts and our hypotheses, and we'll see what actually shakes down as this new seller dashboard is, you know, rolled out to all the sellers over time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure we'll have, you know, other updates as things evolve and we actually figure out what the heck is going on with this. But like you said, before we press record, Amazon, the hope is that they'll be very forthcoming and just kind of, you know, transparent about what the new processes are. But oftentimes they give a lot of generalities and pretty vague statements. And then they're like, right, cool. We clear. You're like, yeah, clear as mud. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to have to get on the phone and call somebody else because this did nothing for me. So that's pretty typical of an Amazon rollout of whatever they are. You know,
it's kind of like our podcast, you know, we just share a bunch of stuff and you're like, I have no idea what you guys just said for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. Best of luck. You know, just take what we said, see if it works. If it doesn't, we didn't say it would. And if it does, told you so, is what basically how this all works. But we're going to go to this week's main event. And it's about another platform, not about Amazon, but about Etsy. So let's go to this week's main event.
Ladies and gentlemen, the main event.
All right, we said that we're going to talk about Etsy and some tips for selling on Etsy. I think we have maybe, I don't know, 10 or so tips, just some things that we want to touch on that would be helpful for you guys to know. Especially if you are just getting into the Etsy game or considering getting into the Etsy game. I think off the top, it's important to know that I think Etsy is definitely, Mike just referred or kind of alluded to the fact that Amazon is kind of the leader in what they're doing. And Etsy has actually kind of tightened the reins on some of the stuff that they do and do not allow. But it's still a very, very quickly and rapidly growing platform. To get on to help diversify. I think the latest statistic or latest study is that Etsy sellers contributed $14.3 billion into the U.S. economy in 2021. And that's a 167% increase from the $5.7 billion in 2018. That's a lot. That's a substantial growth in 3 years.
It's also really impressive. It's also really impressive that you did that math in your head.
I know that it wasn't on the notes at all. It was right there. I had to maybe try and feign. I see carry the one and then you take it. No, I'm a terrible mathematician. It's right in front of me. But the notes were a little condensed and I had to kind of move the screen and acting is what it was. But Etsy has more than 120 million items for sale. Think about 120 million items. It's incredible. So we're going to go through some stuff and let you know some things to keep in mind when you're wanting to sell on Etsy. So, Travis, what would be one of the first ones on the list?
Well, I think, just having Mike on and talking about Amazon, you know, just move that all of that discussion over to Etsy. And you really need to know what you can and what you can't sell on the Etsy platform. That's super important because none of us want to get our account suspended on any platform. And so Etsy has, you know, they've got specific things that they've said you can and specific things that they've said you can't sell on their platform.
Right.
And so, You can find all this at the, you know, all of Etsy's seller policies on their website. I mean, they've got just pages and pages of them. But let's break down some of the basics of what you can and can't sell on Etsy. The first thing would be, you know, obviously just products that you have created, you know, because if you've created them, you have the rights to sell them because they're your products. Etsy kind of got started in the vintage game. So, you can sell vintage items that are even like older than you just made them. Maybe they're 20 years plus. Digital materials, which a lot of people don't necessarily know, you can actually sell digital files. And maybe we talked about that a little bit on the show. But if you design something, you know, maybe you have an art piece or something, you can sell that on Etsy. What are some other things you can sell?
Yeah, products you created with a production partner, which of course we've talked about a ton here on the show, using someone like Make Your Mark Design, that t-shirts or signs, wooden signs or what have you. That is, of course, fair game. And then craft supplies, things that are using to make crafts. I mean, Etsy kind of started niched into that whole like handmade custom type stuff is kind of how it was the niche that it kind of first you know, leaned into when it launched. So it makes a lot of sense that craft supplies is a great idea because people are still out there looking for things to use to make products themselves. And back to the digital materials, written or designed, there's a handful of things that I've purchased on before. Like if I want a poster, instead of paying for, you know, the poster and the frame, I'll just buy the digital file off of Etsy. And then I'll print it myself for cheaper, at, you know, a store, FedEx store or whatever, the kind of a large format and just pay for the actual file. And then you have the rights to print that as well. There's also some stuff that, of course, you can't sell on Etsy. And some of these are obvious, I hope. starting with, you know, alcohol jugs and tobacco products. Could you sell a handcrafted tobacco pipe? Probably.
I could not sell this Sam Adams Oktoberfest on Etsy.
No, but you could sell a handcrafted bottle opener that Travis could be having on his keychains. So there's things that lend themselves, like, you know, tobacco pipes or bottle openers. You just can't put tobacco in the pipes or sell the bottle with the opener to do that. You know, to Mike's point earlier, you know, copyright material and handmade items that you did not make. We've talked at, you know, ad nauseum about copyright issues, being smart about it, knowing what you can and cannot sell and don't rip off other people's stuff. Weapons and explosives, you can't sell the dynamite, even the Acme dynamite that the Roadrunner used to use to get Wile E. Coyote. You can't sell them. Travis, anything else on the list of stuff that you just shouldn't and cannot sell on Etsy?
Yeah. Merch by Amazon has a rule is like you can't sell anything that's like promoting or profiting off of
a tragedy.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And so same thing with Etsy, items that promote you know, tragedy or anything like that, or if they glorify hatred or violence, you know, there's, you know, you're gonna get your account deactivated really quick. This is one of those kind of danger areas for print on demand sellers because, you know, you might think, oh, this is a hilarious joke, but, it might be just a little bit off color. And if they sense it, if they see it like that,
and I think there was even one instance that I heard, cause I mean, these shirts are everywhere. I've seen them everywhere, but the back-to-back World War champions that shirts that you've seen. There has been instances that I've heard of where people have gotten their account suspended or taken down for those shirts, because even though it seems a pretty benign joke for the most part, it is referencing two world wars that were impactful for very negative reasons on the entire world. So, you know, you just got to be careful and understanding what could be perceived. And that's the issue, is that, you know, Travis and I aren't making the rules. So some of the stuff that we might think is kind of funny, like back-to-back World War champs, to me seems harmless, but we're not the ones making the rules. It's completely up to the interpretation of the people in charge. So anything else before we move on to kind of the next point there?
No, I think everything that we just talked about with Mike applies here. Just be smart. Yeah. Don't be stupid. Yeah. Don't don't do anything that's going to even approach the line. And you should be safe, because I mean, technically Acme Dynamite from the Roadrunner is vintage item of more than 20 years old, but still don't sell it.
It's true. And who knows if it even works. Could be a dud, a huge dud. You never know. The next thing, and this is something that I find actually pretty interesting as well, is add multiple payment options. And I find it interesting because I've worked with clients in the past who, you know, I helped set up their Squarespace store or their Shopify. Mm-hmm. And they are adamant about allowing PayPal as an option of payment because their customers want to pay with PayPal. I, up until that point, have never really considered people using PayPal for online transactions. But a recent study shows that 7% of online shoppers abandon shopping carts because there aren't enough payment options. So
that's crazy.
It's nuts. You wouldn't think that's like, what are you talking about? I have Stripe plugged in. They can pay with a credit card or a debit card, but some people want to pay with, I can tell you on my phone, if there's an Apple Pay option, that's the easiest thing for me to do is click the button, double click, Face ID. It's pay. I don't have to enter anything. That's usually my go-to. And so if there isn't that option, okay, I guess I'll, you know, I'm not one of those 7% apparently that abandons their cart. I'll enter in the information begrudgingly. But, you know, Apple Pay and Google Pay are huge options because it's simplicity. And the less things that your customer, when it comes to like Apple Pay and Google Pay, the less the resistance they have to entering the payment information, if it's literally just a fingerprint or a Face ID, it takes the recognition and the time of being like, never mind, I don't need this. While they're entering the card number, looking at the total, thinking about the shipping, I'm not going to get it. I'll just wait for a later time, abandon their car or whatever. Make it easy. Just streamline that thing. I think PayPal is pretty much the same as well. Sign in with PayPal and all the information is there for them and they're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider how much how many shoppers are using mobile these days? It's astronomical. It's more than half of your shoppers that are coming to your store using mobile. And so do you really want to have them, you know, get out their wallet and pull out the credit card and type in all those numbers on a mobile device? Or to Josiah's point, Face ID, boom, you know, it's paid for. They don't have to do anything else. So the more payment options you can give to your client or to your potential customers, the less friction, but less retail friction that there is for them to actually finish checking out and actually buying your item. So Etsy does support Apple Pay, Google Pay, PayPal, credit cards, debit cards, even, you know, Etsy gift cards. But I would highly recommend you consider adding an Apple Pay or a Google Pay function for that mobile shopper. Yeah. I think that'll go a long way towards helping you capture that sale and finalize that sale.
Yeah, 100%. And then the next thing I would say too is build your mailing list. I think we've talked about this quite a bit, but any affiliate marketer, anyone that's going to be out there that you're like, how do you build an audience? How do you get your product in front of people? They're probably going to tell you that capturing emails is one of the most important things that you can do. Mm-hmm. It plays a significant role in online sales with an average return on investment of $36 for every dollar spent on capturing that email, which is a pretty huge ROI. $36 for every $1. Mm-hmm. I don't have that percentage in front of me in the notes. So you at home can figure out that ROI percentage. But yeah, it's definitely a good piece of advice to keep in mind when you're trying to build your audience. Yeah. People come in for one product and you want to get them back and they already like your style. They already like the vibe, the aesthetic, the whatever of your shop, the designs, and you're releasing new stuff. Send them an email with that thing because they've already bought once. Right. I can tell you just recently, I've shopped at this online in this place called Disciple Threads. I like their designs and I bought from them and then they shot me an email with a new design that released. And I was like, that's pretty sweet. And it's in there. It's in that closet. So that, I mean, it works. It's effective.
The one thing you do need to worry or not worry about, but just make sure you're complying with Etsy's policies. It's actually against Etsy's policies to just like put every single buyer's contact info into a contact form. You can't do that. But what you can do is you can give them an opt-in when you send them a thank you message at the end after they've got their, you know, hey, if you liked your product, you know, we release products all the time and we update our mailing list. Please sign in here. That is okay to do with Etsy. So you may just make sure that you're complying with Etsy's terms of use and their terms of service and things like that when it comes to, you know, technically soliciting their customers. I mean, it's your customer, but it's on Etsy's platform. But it's on, so you got to play by their
rules. Etsy's customer for they're the gatekeepers. It's their customer. It's kind of the same thing with Amazon. Amazon's not a huge fan of that either. So yeah, to Travis's point,
Amazon's even tighter knit, or you're not supposed to ever reach out to customers, but yet.
Yeah.
I mean, every single one of us has bought a product on Amazon and gotten a card that's said, go here, here's 5% off. You can actually do that with like a 5% off card, but you're supposed to push them back to Amazon and not collect their email. Etsy is a little bit nicer or looser, I guess, on their guidelines for that. So you can include like an opt-in form on a thank you message, or you can even do it like on your shop banner. In your email signature, when you send that, that's a great place to do it too. Business cards that are pushing people towards your store, of course, because you're going to hand that to somebody. So just be smart. But it's a huge, huge benefit down the line to build that list. That list can, you know, to Josiah's point earlier, can really pay off exponentially for the low price that you had to pay for a Constant Contact or a MailChimp or an AWeber or whoever you're using. There may be a monthly fee associated with that, but you can really, really quickly recoup that and then some by building your email list.
Yeah, 100%. So the next thing I think too, Travis, I'd say optimize your Etsy shop profile. I think Etsy's really big on, it is very niche, and we've talked about aesthetic, and so it's just good to make sure that your profile, including everything from your shop banner to your shop policies, you know, when you have a professional looking, well thought out profile presentation with photos and video, it just lends itself to more trust from the consumer side, because it looks polished, it looks safe, it looks like these guys know what they're doing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even we're talking about like even your about page. So think about it this way. Every word that you type is a potential SEO boost for your store.
Yeah.
You know, so you can get more people by having a really robust about page that may not have ever seen your shop or see your shop in the first place, but they come there because for whatever reason, or when they do get there, they see that you've taken time and care. You have 5,000 characters in your about page to talk about. I mean, that's a lot of words. You can really go into that. But even beyond that, to your point, you know, you talked about the Etsy banner. It needs to be exactly what they say. They don't show up on mobile, but they need to be exactly 760 by 100 pixels in size. Don't make it any bigger. Don't make it any smaller. Follow their rules for all of these different things, because that's going to put you in a better place to look more professional, look more, you know, like you got your stuff together, you know, and then even beyond that, like your actual shop title, if you haven't launched at all, think about putting keywords in there. Gift, you know, something gift shop or so, you know, just those are also SEO searchable. So really think through your whole profile, everything that you're putting out there that's not a product, I would include in your Etsy shop profile. And there's just a ton of stuff. What else is there? Is there anything else you could think of, Josiah, that we might want to include on this point?
Yeah, I think to your point, you know, the shop banner is a good idea. Or sorry, the cover photo is good, because shop banners don't show up on a mobile. We've talked about everything is going mobile. Mm-hmm. So the more that people can see from their phones, the better. I think it's definitely going to be advantageous to you. You can do, introducing your team, even if it's just you and your spouse or you and your best friend. The more people can get attached to who you are and your story and what makes you unique, mm-hmm. oftentimes is your story, that about section, like Travis was saying, and letting people know who you are, why you're doing this. Is this handcrafted? Was it inspired by a relative, or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that mm-hmm. kind of stuff is very compelling and can be the thing that sets you apart from someone that sells something similar, but people want to support you because they've invested in you and your team and the story and the motivation behind what you're selling.
Right. Yeah. I think, yeah, that whole basic shop setup. The other thing that you can do, and I personally believe that it gives a boost in the algorithm, is if you update that stuff, you know, every once in a while, you know, like somewhat regularly, you update your about, maybe not your whole thing and not just sure. write it all over again, but maybe you just tweak some words and maybe add a little paragraph that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
I think that helps you. Any place you can put text, if you're tweaking that, if you're changing that, just even the slightest amount, it causes the Google spiders, you know, the crawlers
yeah.
to actually like re-log that as an update. Mm-hmm. And even if Etsy doesn't like it, Google likes it. They love the, you know, a page that is constantly refreshed. So you can get a little, yeah. little SEO juice, by doing that on the on a somewhat regular basis. I think
yeah.
we can probably move into like actual products now after we've talked about, you know, the shop profile and putting all of our energy into that.
Yeah.
The next one on the list is maximizing your tags. And so if you're not familiar, tags are basically just keywords. It's the same yep. type of thing. And so Etsy gives you 13 basically phrases. They're not necessarily right. just 13 words. It's actually 13 yeah, it phrases.
Yeah.
And those phrases can be up to 20 characters. So you might do coffee mug for nurse as a tag. And right. I don't know. I didn't count them, but I'm thinking that's probably less than 20 words. That could be one tag.
Yep.
Let's do that 13 times.
Yep. Yeah. And it's encouraged, of course, to use all three tags, use phrases like Travis was saying, use tags similar to your title keywords. Because this is what, you know, Etsy relies heavily on to determine the product's relevance to buyer searches. So you want to make sure that this thing is really dialed in and you're using all 13 of those tags. Don't repeat tags or categories. Mm-hmm. Don't use plurals or misspelled words. Don't tag in multiple languages, yeah. you know, don't use irrelevant keywords. You want to make sure these are really, really polished.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about Etsy and Amazon as well. Plurals don't matter. They automatically will add that to a yeah. search term. If someone types in something that's not plural or something that is plural and you don't have the plural, that's totally fine. You're still going to get the same SEO juice.
Yeah.
In Etsy's algorithm, same with Amazon. But yeah, don't use irrelevant keywords that don't, I mean, who would do that? You know, don't, why would you do that? Because if someone's searching for one thing and you show up because you used an irrelevant keyword, you ain't going to get that sale because you're right. not selling the thing that they wanted to search for. Yeah. That's kind of a no brainer, but yeah. And you can also, one of the biggest tips, I think, when you're talking about tags, you're talking about keywords on any platform, try to figure out ways you can use long tail keywords. And yep. For those of our listeners who don't know what that means, long tail is, so if you're searching for, you know, if you want like a pair of red Nike, you know, high tops, well, you know, don't use, you know, if you're selling that, don't use Nike. I mean, you might use Nike, but you want to make sure you get as many things into your search right. term that can be searched, because if someone's looking for red Nike high tops, they're not looking for blue Nike high tops. And so right. if you just put Nike high tops, you might get somebody that's looking for a blue one, but if you would have put red, you wouldn't have showed up for there and you can be more relevant. So the longer the phrase is, try to maximize that 20 characters. And one other thing I have heard, and I believe it's been tested out, the first of your 13 tags has more SEO juice or algorithm juice than the 13th tag. So try to get your best tags, your best keywords at the front of those. And then as you go, kind of they can decrease in value, if you will. Yeah. Because those first ones are always going to pop up first.
Maybe it's effective or good practice to just in a separate Word document, you know, or a note or whatever, just type out those 13 phrases so that, and see which ones you think are most effective and then enter them Etsy that way instead of going off the top of your head. And then the number 12 might be the best one, but then you have to go and, you know, move it, or maybe you don't even think to, and that one is mm-hmm. going to be, you know, kind of less juicy in terms of SEO. that's a good tip. Make sure you're the best tag is up front on first on the list.
The next one would be write effective product descriptions. And this one, I mean, obviously you're thinking, well, duh, of course I'm going to do that. But
I think
one of the things that trips sellers up sometimes when they're writing product descriptions is that they're typing out all of the basic idea or the basic like bullet points. You know, it's an 11 ounce coffee mug. It has a C handle. It has, you know, which is all fine and good. But when you're writing an effective product description, you don't want to just talk about the features of the item you're selling. You want to talk about the benefits. And then that requires you to put yourself into the buyer's mentality. So if I'm thinking about buying a Nurse coffee mug, who am I? Who am I as a person? Well, I'm probably somebody who knows a nurse and I want to gift that to them. So I want to put myself in that particular mindset as I'm writing out this product description. And I don't just want to talk about the fact that it's 11 ounces and it has a C handle grip, or, you know, it's microwaves and dishwasher safe and all of those things, which are fine to include because you have a lot of, it's a big product description. You can write a lot of things, but I think the things you want to really lead with are emotional phrases, things that I as the buyer can connect with as I'm reading through this and going, you know what? Yeah. I know Sally's going to love this when I give it to her because, you know, I've written, this is a great gift item for the nurse or whoever, you know, someone who just passed got their nursing license. It's the perfect gift for them. They're going to light up the moment they see this hilarious phrase. You can't imagine your joy when you see, I mean, things like that. You're talking about emotion. Those I think are the most effective product descriptions. And I think if you compare that with another product that just has funny, it's a funny coffee mug for nurses. It's 11 ounces. It's dishwasher safe. You know, I guarantee the one that you really spent the time going through the emotions part of it and the benefits rather than just the features is going to sell better every single time.
Yeah. And I think it's the principle of making the buyer the hero of the story, right?
Yeah.
So they're thinking about, excuse me. Oh my goodness. So when you're telling the emotions and you're saying, you know, you won't imagine the joy on your friend's face or your favorite nurse's face or whatever, you're also in their minds, they are the hero of the story because they are giving the gift and they're going to be, you know, the person's going to be appreciative of them and how thoughtful they are. And so it does go a ways for them to be made the hero of the story. Your buyer is the hero. You're not the hero for making the mug. They're the hero for buying it. And so when your description, I don't know what is happening. I need some water. when your description plays on the emotion, that tells that story.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of obvious things that you also want to include because it's Etsy. There's really not a lot of other places you can put like your estimated production time and your estimated shipping time and, you know, the size of it. So there are some feature things that you need to include, but you can put those at the bottom. I mean, there's a see more button that they'll push because they want to know how much it's going to cost and all that. They want to know that information. But at the top, man, tell a story, make them the hero, you know, give them a reason that this is going to be the best thing that they've done all day by buying your nurse coffee mug or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. the next tip would be, you know, adopt a product pricing strategy, which is something that we've talked a lot about on the show. There's a whole episode about, you know, COGS and how you can, mm-hmm. how you can figure out your pricing based on your cost of goods. And so determining a competitive price while keeping your business profitable, requires strategy. It requires some real sitting down and figuring out, crunching those numbers and figuring out what exactly that looks like. Some things that are valuable ideas for developing a pricing strategy is make sure your price covers the cost of materials and labor. Make mm-hmm. sure to account for overhead costs like shipping, marketing, ads, promotions, when you're computing all of that. Do research on competitor pricing because you do want to be competitive. You don't want to outprice yourself to where no one's going to purchase the product. So there has to be this you know, knowledge, awareness of what your competitor is selling the product for so you can be competitively priced. Consider your target audience. Who is buying this? Is it college kids? Is it, you know, what demographic? Because then you have to consider how much money they do and your disposable income they have to use or not. And then cost of shipping. And we know it's based on the dimensions and the weight and not just the item. So those are some things to keep in mind when you're trying to figure out a pricing strategy. And Travis, I know, you know, Make Your Mark Design has been doing that for the last couple of months.
Forever. Just
kind of whittling away that piece of wood to figure out, you know, how this looks or what's the most profitable way to go about this.
Yeah, we recently hired a bookkeeper who she's actually a CPA in the Philippines. So she's a virtual assistant and she is amazing. And so she has gone through loads and loads of product data. And if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that we went through a time when we were timing people and figuring out how much one sheet of bubble wrap costs and extrapolating that on how many you need to to package this product and the boxes and then the time that it took and all of that. So we did all that data. She's actually going through and like looking at every single product we do. And I can't tell you how important this is, even at a macro level. I mean, we're getting really down into the micro, which is, I think, equally as important as you continue to scale and get bigger. You really do need to get to the micro level. Like, okay, you make this much on a 15-ounce coffee mug. You make this much on a t-shirt. You make this much on a pillow, you know, and then you can focus your attention on the things that you make more money on, technically or theoretically. Or you can raise your prices on the things that you don't, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different things, but the bottom line on this particular point exactly what you said, you need to factor all of those extra costs. I mean, do you pay for internet? Well, that needs to be somewhere factored into your costs and you need to understand that. Do you need to hire a bookkeeper? Well, again, fixed cost that needs to be inserted in somewhere into that, that math problem, that equation. As you're thinking about a price strategy. Now it's okay to just start and go, okay, I think this will sell for $20. That's totally fine. Yep. I think as you continue to sell, this is a really important point. Just to really dig in. I don't think you can ever dig in too much. I think it's super important to any business as they want to grow to really have a specific product pricing strategy that, while you might do some research on a competitor product and say, okay, well, they're selling it for this, man, but I can't afford to sell it for that. Well, that's okay. Sell it for more. That's totally okay. There's still going to be people that'll buy your product because they like it better. That's just the nature of e-commerce. They have a ton of options. But make sure that the reason you're pricing it for more is because of a strategy and not just willy-nilly, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, speaking about being competitive, you also want to offer competitive shipping. Mm-hmm. Especially, it seems, you know, shipping keeps getting more expensive, but
you know, sure does.
It is what it is, and people are, you know, expecting to pay shipping. So, you know, unless of course, you know, your product is digital, like we mentioned, and it's just a piece of art or you know, a PDF upload. You don't really have to worry about that. But one thing you can think to do to be competitive is just set a minimum order quantity or amount for free shipping. And so you know, that has gotten me in the past. I'm sure it's gotten you too, Travis. You're like, oh, just for $20 more and save on shipping. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll do that. And, you know, we'll go from there.
Right.
Which I think is an effective way to just do like a run a sort of promotion that helps people be motivated to purchase your product just because of the shipping savings.
Yeah. Now Etsy does, they offer a SEO boost if you offer free shipping on all your on a particular product.
Sure.
But that doesn't have to be site wide or product, you know, your whole catalog wide. You can say, okay, well, I have enough margin. I can offer free shipping on these, but these other things I need to charge shipping on because, you know, it's going to be more, or maybe it's more than a pound. So I have to ship it, you know, not first class. So I have to pay more. But the point is, if you can do a free shipping and incorporate it in SEO, you'll get an SEO boost from Etsy. At least that's what they say. But I wouldn't shy away from, I mean, I've also seen really, really competitive stores, and you've probably seen them too on Etsy, that it's like, and this is kind of gray hat. I've seen them like, they'll have like a t-shirt. Okay. And it's, and it'll show up as like $9.99 for this t-shirt, free shipping. And then you'll click on it and you'll see that the only $9.99 is the very small orange t-shirt.
Sure.
And so they get the $9.99 thing on their deal and then everything else is $20 plus shipping, you know? So they got you onto their page.
Yeah.
Through
that happened to me multiple times. So signs of guns.
I know. And that really frustrates me as a seller, but I think it works. But the point is, I mean, we're talking about shipping here, not necessarily product costing and all of that. I mean, those are some, take that as you will. I can imagine Etsy at some point is going to say, you know what, that's not okay. We're going to take a blended average of all your products and that's going to be the price that we display. But they're not doing it yet. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. another piece of advice, we kind of mentioned this as well, and I know we're getting close to the hour mark. So I'll kind of quickly list these last three or last two rather. Engage your customers. And we've talked about the way you can get people onto that mailing list and, you know, doing it within, you know, TOS, that's these TOS terms of service, making sure you're not doing something that's going to, you know, jeopardize the health of your store, because what's the point of a newsletter if they have nowhere to go? Because you don't have an Etsy exactly. store anymore. And so, you can get creative with it. Customer engagement is huge. Again, to the Disciple Threads example that I was talking about, I got that other shirt. And when I opened it, there was another sticker in there. And on the back of it, it said, "Hey, Josiah, it's nice to see you back in the shop." And then the owner's signature, you know, a little note, whatever. And so he knew it was a recurring order. And he, you know, so that kind of, I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's awesome. It's really good. And it's really engaging. He didn't have to do anything else to make me feel like that guy appreciates my business. Like, truly, you know what I mean? So there's different ways you can do that. Not necessarily even a newsletter, but engaging things like that, you know, developing an abandoned cart recovery strategy, which has worked, you know, has worked in the past as well. But I think the biggest one for engagement is social media. If you have a social media for your Etsy page, that is the place, like an Instagram, that's where you interact with your customers. If you're in the comments, if you post something and someone says, "I love that, where can I get it?" You can say, "Hey, link in bio," and, or, you know, "Thanks for the support," whatever. That is probably the most effective customer engagement because they follow your Instagram stories. You can tell your story there. You can tell more about who you are, show them your family, your pets, your husband, your wife, whatever. And they really get to know you there. And if you engage there, it will translate to your sales because they'll trust you more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that really goes kind of dovetails well with, you know, writing a really engaging about me page, you know, and telling, "Hey, I have a husband, I have dogs, I have, you know," and then, and here's the social, and you can see those dogs, you can see that husband. It makes you a real person. And just to your point, the more real you can become to your customers, the more they can potentially trust you, which is number one sales tactic, is to get your customers to trust you.
Right.
So yeah, don't shy away from engaging with them. We talked about email capture, you know, before. I love the social media part, you know, put some of you into your product description, even maybe. But definitely your about page and kind of all of that, all of the stuff that doesn't contain products, because that's where, you know, if there's no products on the page or no products, no one's trying to sell me anything. So I feel more comfortable. Right. So I can engage with you, you know, on a more peer-to-peer basis. And then if I am interested, you know, I do know that you sell stuff. And so maybe you drop something in their social media and all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and support these guys.
Yeah. Yep. And I think it's also, you know, I think we talked about this before, but a good balance between shilling and advertising on your social media. If your social media page is nothing but product, buy, you're going to turn off people pretty quickly, and you'll probably get a lot of people unfollowing or at least unsubscribing to your feed. So your follower count will stay the same, but the amount of people that it's reaching will dwindle. And so you want to definitely at least do a one-to-one for every product. Do something personal. I'd even say 2-to-1, like something personal, a picture of like Travis and the dogs or whoever. The more personal you can be, and then you pepper in the hard sell of products, I think the more successful that social media channel is going to be. And my wife follows a plethora of Instagram sellers because their husband's hilarious or their child's cute or their dogs are funny or she's funny or whatever. And she also sells some really awesome home decor stuff, but it's the personal stuff that hooks her to the page instead of photos of the stuff that they sell. So
totally. All right. So the last one. The last one we're going to talk about, as we approach the hour mark, we talk about this all the time. We just had an episode on it recently, but look at the holiday trends.
Yep.
Make sure that you are seeing, not only seeing what's selling, but also seeing what holidays are coming up. We've had some of those lists of holidays that we've gone through, and it's just hilarious. Some of the holidays that people will buy products for in the US. And I'm sure abroad too, but you know, we've had whole lists that, you know, 2000 holidays or whatever in a year, and you can sell for any of those. So I think it's super important to not only know when the holidays are coming, but then also Etsy actually publishes a list every single year and says, hey, here are the trends for the holidays. And they're specifically talking about Q4 holidays, you know, like Christmas and Hanukkah and, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But it's a really good idea to check that out, to find that page and go, okay, am I selling some of these trends? And if I'm not, maybe there's some ideas for some new products that you can launch right before they're going to be super hot in the marketplace.
Yep. And the next one coming up, you would think is Halloween, but October 11th is Canadian Thanksgiving. So,
whoa,
get on that.
Who knew?
It's coming up.
Canadians knew.
So yeah. it's where they gather around and cut up the Tim Hortons and sheer maple syrupy. anyway, so I'm sure that's exactly what they don't do. But yeah, check that out as well. Always know the holidays that are coming up. So Travis, anything else before we kind of wrap this? I know we were a little light on the waffle this week just because Mike was on the field and we had to throw to him as soon as possible. But oh, speaking of waffle, I was going to tell you in that waffle section, you know, a lot of things have been going on. You know, the Queen of England recently passed away, you know, lots of national news, but another person who, of course, a lesser known celebrity, obviously, but someone that we all benefit from, the man who invented the throat lozenges died last week.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that. Was that was in the news? I didn't know that.
That's cool. You know,
I mean, sad. It's sad. It's not sad. Cool.
Yeah. So, he died last week. But hey, and there was no coffin at his funeral. And that's this week's Weekly Dad Joke, as if you think we would forget, which you probably all did think we forgot, but we didn't. I just circled back to it. But yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Maybe you had to break this one up in two parts. Whichever you want to do, it doesn't matter to us, but we hope that you found these insights helpful for you, especially for selling on Etsy, or if you're even contemplating getting into the Etsy game, kind of giving you a head start on how to make your profile stand out from the rest of the people out there. So as always, if you want to get in
touch
with us,
Hotline fans,
you can reach out to us through our Facebook group. That is always the number one place to go, printonamancast.com/Facebook, to reach out, join the conversation, leave a dad joke or two, which there was one that I said I would shout out this week. And so I have to do it. I have to do it. It's a new study that I heard recently that they put in the Facebook group. But did you know that 9 out of 10 people who struggle with hurdles, they never get over it? Oh, I genuinely enjoy that joke so much.
Who was that? Who was that? Was that? Was it Dustin?
Yes, it was Dustin. Yes.
All right, Dustin.
Thank you, Dustin. Shout out. You got shouted out for your dad jokery. Thank you so much. So now, if you want to be shouted out for your dad jokery, you can join us on the Facebook group. But it's more than just a place for dad jokes. If you have questions, if you have insights, if you have things that you feel like people should know, if you find a cool link to a cool article, whatever that is, that's the place to share it, to get our feedback, to get others' feedback. The goal of this podcast was always to create a community of people that were able to rely on one another for help when it comes to the print-on-demand industry. And so that's what we would love to see happen as well. We're also on Instagram, printondemandcast.com/Instagram and slash YouTube as well. And if you don't do any of that, you can email us at info@printondemandcast.com and reach out to us that way as well. And as always, regardless of where you listen to your podcasts, we are there. Okay, there's a ton out there, and I think we're pretty much on all of them. But if you're listening on the podcast app through Apple, which I will forever call iTunes because I refuse to conform to my nostalgia being destroyed, you can rate us. You can leave us a star review and a comment and let us know what you think about the show. And besides it being fun for Travis and I to hear from you in that way, it also helps the algorithm so that people who need this information can get it. So rate and subscribe on iTunes and on Spotify as well, wherever you get your podcast. So Travis, anything else before we wrap this one up?
I was just going to say a little self-promotion. I was actually on the Graphics Pro podcast recently, and they just released it today. It's the 26th, Monday. And I was like, I went to their website and there's my big face right there on the front, you know, hey, Make Your Mark Design, Travis. And it's talking about obviously our production facility. And, but I did tell them that I had a podcast too. So, you know, Who knows, maybe we'll get some people joining us from that, but, that was a real, real great time. If you do want to take a listen to that, you can go to our Facebook group. I just did a post earlier, right before we pressed record. And yeah, you can head over there and listen to me, talk about print on demand and production.
Awesome. Yeah. Please go do that. Support that show. Great folks over there. And avail yourself of that. Like I said, it's on the Facebook group. Again, the printondemandcast.com/Facebook. So with that being said, for Travis, I'm Josiah. We'll see you next week right here on the Print on Demand Cast.
See ya.
Hey, babe. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Print on Demand Cast. We hope you enjoyed the Totally Tubular Show. If you've got a question or a suggestion for the show, send Travis and Josiah an email at info@printondemandcast.com. Want to be wicked nice? Take a minute to rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe now so you don't miss next week's episode. See you next time for sure.
In a world where businesses everywhere are trying to make print-on-demand sales, one podcast goes above and beyond every week to bring the most POD-specific information there is. All to help save the day, every day. Don't succumb to the enemies of your print-on-demand business. Sign up today for the Print on Demand Cast VIP email at printondemandcast.com/VIP. This time, it's for real.